Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Monday, November 30th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me today. We've got a special show ready for you. We have a special guest joining us today for the entire show, live, in fact, which I find to be exciting for most people because we've never actually done this live together. Welcome, Whitney Webb, to the live version.
Hi!
So we're here today to, there's been so much going on. There's so much flying around. Whitney and I have been busy. We haven't had a chance to connect. So we thought, you know, let's just connect today for the daily wrap up and just sort of have a, you know, sort of a casual discussion about 100 different things going on. And on that note, actually, I will do my best to keep an eye on the channels. If you guys have any comments, please tag us and we may respond to it depending on what we're talking about. But thank you for joining today, Whitney. There's so much to get into. Some of your articles obviously are really important. We're going to talk about those. But how are you today? What's going on?
Oh, you know, things are all right. Only 1 month left of 2020. So I guess it's a good or a bad thing, depending on how you look at things and current events. But, you know,
yeah, I think definitely depends more on you know, literally everything except the date, right? So it's like, depends on whatever else happens. But so, I mean, there's so many conversations that we could get into. We might not get into all of them today, but, you know, we've been talking about the COVID-19 discussion, the vaccine, the contact tracing, the artificial intelligence tie-in with all of this that can, you know, discussion with China and how that could be something that's more, you know, what this is really all about or the origins of this story, or is the election chaos discussion and how that ties in with what we're dealing with COVID-19, and as well as long sought agendas that are around foreign policy. And, you know, there's so many ways this all ties together, but we're going to start off today with one of her articles an article she did, as well as a part two that is coming. And this is a really kind of alarming discussion about this eugenics tie with the vaccine agenda, but specifically with Operation Warp Speed today. And that's not something that should be very shocking. I mean, this is very, whether we're talking about the technocratic discussion or historically speaking, this country's past, it's really not that shocking. But why don't you kind of walk us into this with your, you know, maybe the first article and into where you're going to be getting into with why this should be important to Americans out there.
Yeah, sure. So it's actually my last three articles of the year. The first one's out, the second one comes out this week, and hopefully the third one soon after. And it's all about different parts of Operation Warp Speed and really the vaccine allocation strategy that was developed not just by the Warp Speed people, you know, the part of the government involved in Warp Speed, but also originally came from the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Basically, the reasonings reasoning behind labeling certain groups, which if you read the documentation are essentially ethnic minorities, why those have to be priority groups and why other cohorts of the population that always used to be number one to be vaccinated first, like first responders, police, DHS officials, have been removed. And, you know, it's a really unprecedented way of conducting a national vaccination strategy that's never been happened before. You add that to the fact, too, that all the vaccines being considered are all experimental, have never been taken to market before. It's just really astounding.
Right off the bat in this conversation, or just put this thought out there, I think this is not that difficult to grasp. If you're claiming that these people are, they need this because of limitations in their lives or underprivileged, I mean, you're literally saying that these people are less than, right? I mean, that's what you're arguing. And that's a broad statement about minorities. And that's right. It's the same thing we see with this kind of racial discussion or things like, what was the discussion? I'm blanking on the term now, affirmative action kind of things, right? Which aren't they themselves sort of underlyingly racist? I mean, that's what it feels like. And that's I think something I hear a lot from a minority standpoint, that's what is the perception to a lot of people in that position. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if you look at the reasoning of in these reference materials and in these strategies themselves, I mean, they just don't hold water. They're basically just trying to say, like, we have to vaccinate all these ethnic minorities first, because this is the first year where Americans readily acknowledge police brutality, right? What does that have to do with vaccines? And then it talks about, you know, solving structural racism by giving minorities vaccines first, acting like that's going to help structural racism in the healthcare center or healthcare system. But why not do something, propose something like Medicare for all or subsidize medical treatment for minorities instead of like, oh, it's just the vaccine that will solve magically structural racism. And at the same time where they're using like police brutality as a selling point for this, police and DHS officials for the first time since the 2001 anthrax attacks are recommended to not be a priority group, are recommended to not get the vaccine first. That to me is super telling. And then you have the other aspect of the fact that the organization, the company, chosen to identify the ethnic minorities that are going to get the vaccine first. They chose Palantir. What is Palantir known for? Targeting those same national minorities in oppressive and awful ways on behalf of the national security state, whether it's through their contracts with ICE or through their contracts with law enforcement agencies, their predictive policing programs that are, you know, notorious for being super racially biased and things like that. And then, I mean, it's just, it's really outrageous.
Well, the history is obvious. I mean, there's a reason people in this position, that's one of the arguments, is that, you know, people in these minority circles are concerned. What about all the history of Americans, the government testing on Americans, a Tuskegee project, and on and on and on there. And then they act like that is the reason, like this kind of conspiracy mindset is why we have to be concerned. There's no conspiracy there. There's historical facts. And so it's kind of interesting. And what I think it's, I get now, I understand more what they're driving at. One, obviously the vaccine is inherently good. There's no question that that's what they're saying, right? So that means that this good thing that will save people, we have to give it to them first because historically they've been oppressed and they wouldn't have access to it, right? That's where it's coming from, yeah?
But in the same document, they also say the safety of this isn't known and certain population subgroups are going to have worse adverse effects than others. And if you look at the research, the very subgroups that are more at risk of adverse events from any vaccine, and particularly this vaccine, are African Americans, one of the priority groups to be vaccinated first, per this. So they admit like, oh, we're going to combat structural racism and promote justice and equality by giving, you know, African Americans the vaccine first, while they say later down that they have no idea about the safety of it, and certain, you know, parts of the population, i.e. African Americans, are more at risk of adverse reactions. So they're basically, you know, saying that it's medical experimentation. They mention Tuskegee in the document, saying like, oh, well, this is why African Americans and also Latinos don't really trust the U.S. government. And, you know, and that is one of the core issues of what they call vaccine hesitancy. Well, instead of addressing, right, well, instead of addressing the core issue then that they admit is at the heart of this vaccine hesitancy issue, you know, which would be holding the people to account that did illegal medical experimentation on minorities in the U.S. Instead of addressing that concern directly, what they're trying to do instead is info warfare, censor people that criticize what they're doing, and also use economic coercion to get people to do it, and also use trusted messengers within minority communities that they pay off with government money to try and make people feel at ease and not like they're being guinea pigs. They say that directly to make them feel like they're not guinea pigs.
Right. So
when they say elsewhere that they are. And what's crazy is that in Tuskegee, that's the same strategy they used then to get a lot of these poor African Americans to stay as part of this experiment where they were unknowingly participating in an experiment. They didn't know they were participating. They thought they were receiving free health care from the U.S. government, when in fact they were hidden. They were not told that they had syphilis because U.S. government scientists wanted to study the untreated natural progression of syphilis in the human body, which has permanent horrific side effects.
It's just that we talk about this so often, and it's so frustrating for people like us to see how obvious the history is. Not one event, not two events, but they've admitted it 239 times. We've talked about Plum Island. We've talked about all these different examples. That's in regard to Lyme disease and ticks. This is the rule, not the exception. This is what they've done throughout history. And what bothers me more than anything is that, so we see that and they acknowledge, you're at more risk, but we're going to give it to you first because it's better for you. And mommy, daddy, government mentality, right? It's like, we know what's best for you. Don't worry about the past. That's all conspiracy theory, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing I found super crazy is that there's HHS documentation. We know, right? And we've talked about on the show before how HHS has given vaccine manufacturers and also vaccine administrators, they're completely not liable for any damage this vaccine can cause. But there are HHS documents that say that the government, that these same groups are not liable to be prosecuted under the Civil Rights Act in relation to the vaccine. That is insane that they would say that explicitly, because that's a lot of protect ethnic minorities. So that means these groups are not liable if they target unfairly an ethnic minority for like medical experimentation. They're explicitly saying they're not liable for that. Why would they make that explicit? And you will start to look at this other stuff and it's just like, what is going on here?
I'm just going to say they're abusing historical discussions about the inequity of this kind of thing in the past, like genuine concerns where, like hypothetically, where it would only go to people in the high, you know, the rich communities or something like that. Right. So I discussed a 2005 UNESCO document where they go over bioethics and so on, and they make a call for this. But that's what they're abusing today, is they're pretending to lean into that while using them to experiment on, essentially. That's how I see it.
Why do they only bring up those points and acknowledge those inequities to exist when it's just for vaccines and for nothing else? That is so, I don't know.
Obvious.
Red flags, people. Yeah. And then the third part my last articles of the year, this three-part thing I'm doing, is about how the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccine, the two people that developed that are tied to an institute in the US, in the UK called the Galton Institute, which until 1989 was the UK's eugenics society. And straight up for the past like 100 years has been promoting the pseudoscience of eugenics, which involved, I mean, you look at the documentation of that group as it previously existed, and it's like they talk about cutting unfit cohorts of the population off of the genetic tree of humanity to like make a master race and all of this stuff. I mean, this is before World War II, right? Because eugenics wasn't born in Nazi Germany; it was born in the U.S. and the U.K. James Corbett does a really good job covering this in Why Big Oil Conquered the World.
Very important.
Talking about the Rockefeller family. Yeah, but I mean, it's the fact that they would maintain the name Eugenics Society until 1989, and then they changed it to the Galton Institute. They named themselves after Sir Francis Galton, the guy that basically invented eugenics. And they're claiming they don't support eugenics anymore. But if you look at how they describe eugenics and the past of the eugenics movement, I mean, they totally whitewash it and are like, this is normal and all of this stuff. I mean, it's really insane. And so those are the people that created one of the vaccines that's going to be all over the world. And they're offering it in a nonprofit way. And some people have promoted that as being like, look how altruistic Oxford University and Big Pharma AstraZeneca is. I don't know, man. If they were developed by Galton Institute speakers, that should send off even more red flags. I mean, you start to look at all this stuff together. It's really hard not to see what's going on. And also the fact that the national security state is running Warp Speed. That same national security state for decades has, killed brown people. That's what they do. And that's what they've done. So to think they want it, like, you know.
That's what's so important about understanding what this is. For people that don't, it's like any other word. It's going to be whitewashed and manipulated, you know, to make it mean what they want it to mean. Eugenics is inherently a racist concept. You're talking about judging people based on their characteristics is literally what that means. And
it's physical about characteristics, basically.
Right. Thank you. That's good clarification. And it's about creating. This is where the actual concept of like the master race comes from. And this is what people need to understand, is that this was something that was being championed by people in the US before the Nazi discussion. And that's when they grabbed it and made it something, whether that was the intention or, you know, that was the drive or not, or it just happened. Then that's all of a sudden where it got like, ooh, that's now taboo. And that's what Whitney's talking about. Now they just change what it's called. And it's the same concept. And these are the people involved with putting out or involved with the vaccine that is going to be used and given to people that are minorities, but understand it's groups that are discussing and championing the idea of experimentation and manipulation of the species for that end game. Like, whether that's actually happening or not, with them being involved should be a huge issue for people. And no one's talking about it but Whitney.
Totally. The National Security State and Galton Institute people should be the people farthest away from this. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not anti-vaccine to bring this stuff up. It's just pointing out that like the wrong people are in charge of this, whether you agree, whether you deem yourself to be pro or anti-vaccine or somewhere in between or whatever. These are not the people that should be anywhere near this.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're not allowed to talk about it, that you're going to be censored now for bringing this up. Yeah, that's alarming.
Absolutely. I want to add to before we go forward that the national security, the people that we're talking about, not the eugenic society aspect, but ultimately the people that have throughout history acted like they were fighting for something more humanitarian, but consistently without fail leaned into the other direction, such as, you know, the references of things like Operation Paperclip that we talked about beforehand, right? This is fighting the Nazis because of these things, so we say, but then we quietly absorb that very thing and it basically becomes NASA. That Project Paperclip becomes the foundation for what later became right. NASA. And these are scientists that were working on exactly this kind of stuff. Or you know, there's numerous examples like that throughout history. So these same people have clearly been leaning into that same concept. So it seems to be a focal point for not just the eugenic societies, but our government.
Right. So, I mean, you think about the national security state, like you were pointing out, right? So, you know, since the CIA was created, they've never been held accountable in any meaningful way for anything they've ever done. Right. And the first CIA director, Alan Dulles, was super cozy with Nazis and tried to get a bunch of them immunity, disobeyed FDR's like orders about amnesty for Nazi officials. And then, you know, like you just mentioned, Operation Paperclip, a bunch of ardent Nazi scientists, very big into the eugenicist cause, were brought over to the U.S. to work for the national security state. So to have that happen back after World War II and have decades of no accountability for these people and assume that, you know, that would have gone away when in fact we have decades of cases we can point to where the U.S. government was doing medical experimentation on either the urban poor or minorities specifically. And you want to tell me that my concerns here are like crazy tinfoil hat conspiracy theories. They're trying to keep me from even like saying this stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
I mean,
remember like Dr. Francis Boyle, who's the author of the Biowarfare Defense Act, which is what I believe that's the correct term title. But he wrote it. And that's what the U.S. government continues to use in regard to biowarfare. He's the one that's openly stated that in his opinion, every one of these things throughout history have been bioweapons, whether it's HIV, AIDS or and so on. And so we have to remember, and I made this point, I think, a couple shows ago, even in regard to the flu. The numbers are generally the same, where African Americans are about 2 to 3 times more likely to get these things. And so it just becomes interesting that you can see that overlap with COVID-19. You can see that overlap. They try to make it about societal differences, which it certainly could be. But I just find that to be an interesting point, especially wondering with what Dr. Boyle points out, that these things have been tailored a certain way, you know?
Well, talking about ethnicity and bioweapons, it's on record that our apartheid South Africa, Israel, and the U.S., all at one point in their history tried to develop a bioweapon tailored to specific ethnicities.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, so this is something. Yeah. So this is something that, you know, that Axis has been interested in developing for a long time. And we know that some governments claim to have abandoned those experiments because they couldn't like identify the genetic markers enough to prevent, you know, the privileged class from being affected by these bioweapons, right? But now, you know, the stuff I'm talking about is from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we're, you know, it's 2020. That type of science has advanced a lot. And now we have mRNA and DNA vaccines and all this stuff. It's, I don't know, it's worth considering some of these past precedents and the fact that there was never any accountability for any of this stuff. So to think they would like just be like, you got us, you know, we're not going to do this anymore, when they never had to be accountable for any crime they've ever committed or the millions of people they've killed and maimed.
It makes me think of the Epstein scenario, right? Where it seems far more likely based on the history that those are the people who won and then or are in control, and ultimately then just tailored the perception of what they were doing the other direction, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing. I mean, the Epstein scenario, we know that that's been ongoing, not Epstein himself, but the whole blackmail, you know, pedophilia network and so on, that's there. And that means that more people have been influenced by it. And so you just wonder, if they're to that degree controlling the end game here, you wonder if that's ultimately where we were a long time ago in the same point, that they've just tailored their perception. And so it's really an alarming thing to realize that everything seems to point to that. You know, and where do you see this going forward into this COVID discussion, right? So if the minorities say there's no way I'm taking that, right? There's no way because you've experimented in the past.
They tried to be really crafty. So basically, what they say in these documents is, well, we want to directly prioritize minorities, but if we do so, we might freak them out and further exacerbate the vaccine hesitancy problem. So what they want to do, what they decide to do instead, is to choose specific cohorts of the population where ethnic minorities are overrepresented in order to maximize vaccine uptake of ethnic minorities without singling them out directly. So the way they say they do that is, you know, saying, incarcerated people, prisoners, in undocumented immigrants. Okay, so prison population in the U.S., ethnic minorities are heavily overrepresented there. Obviously, undocumented immigrants, you know, that's pretty much mostly people from Central America at this point in the U.S. by and large. And they also actually say undocumented immigrants of color. So I guess that makes it pretty clear. But then also they talk about prioritizing specific parts of the essential workforce that are where minorities are overrepresented as well. And they provide some documentation showing, like, you know, the ethnic makeup of certain classes of essential workers and where minorities are overrepresented and things like that. And so they talk about using this overlapping strategy to identify priority groups that are most at risk. And if you look at all these different overlapping groups, they essentially set it up so that it would be ethnic minorities. And they essentially admit that in the document, because they say, right, well, we don't want to freak them out, so we're going to do it this way.
So we'll manipulate them instead for their safety, right?
It's deception. And, yeah, you know, I mean, like I was saying earlier, like Tuskegee being the most famous example, they deceived those people. They told them it was something other than what it really was. They had a trusted messenger, a Black nurse named Eunice Rivers, who had a good rapport with that particular community. They used her to keep people participating in that experiment, even when they wanted to leave and all of this stuff, right? And that's the same strategy they lay out here: deception and trusted messengers in these minority communities to get them to feel at ease about taking the COVID-19 vaccine. And then, of course, the added element of censoring outlets like you and me, right? And also economic coercion, the idea of rolling, making the receipt of rent assistance, or really assistance from the state, whether it's for rent or food or whatever, dependent on having received COVID-19 vaccination. Right.
Financial exclusion. Exactly.
And it's worth pointing out that in addition to this over-focus on ethnic minorities in these documents, the other group they prioritize alongside them are the mentally challenged and the physically disabled. So talking about the eugenics angle, it's a little weird. And they didn't prioritize police this time for the first time ever. I mean, we have to keep that in mind too. Okay, so the people supposedly administering the vaccine, like the military or distributing it and whatever for Warp Speed, they don't have to be vaccinated first before they give the vaccine to people. That doesn't make sense based on all previous pandemic playbooks and national vaccine strategies. There's clearly something weird going on here. And then, you know, that part at the beginning where they're like, this is all because we have to address police brutality. I mean, that shouldn't be in that document. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they're trying to manipulate people's emotions. That's how this works. Yeah. I mean, they try to your emotions and your it circumvents your logic. That's how this works. But what I find interesting about that, well, in regard to the minorities, first of all, it's documented. I mean, and I've talked about this, and this is the document I was referencing. This is from UNESCO, from the United Nations, but where it says very clearly in regard to, you know, consent ultimately. And it makes a very clear discussion about, well, first of all, the point being that consent, where appropriate, be expressed and may be withdrawn by the person concerned at any time for any reason without disadvantage. This is international law. The U.S. government and Israel both signed this in 2005. But it goes on to discuss in this document that in regard to people exactly like we're referencing, people that are handicapped, people who are mentally challenged, people that are you know, cannot speak for themselves in whatever variation, that it's very clear that that still applies to them, for the people that are in control. And this, these things, they just simply don't seem to care about. But I also find it an interesting point that not only prison populations, all the people you mentioned there are all people that are not making choices for themselves. I find that to be very relevant, right? And then it's interesting, I read in the discussion of this, that they're also including not just prison, but people who are just simply incarcerated, whether it's momentarily, right? So if let's say you get arrested for not wearing a mask, you're in there. You can get the vaccine based on this concept. And they've discussed that being one of the ports where they're going to basically say it's not your choice.
Yeah, you know? Well, we've talked about before how they noted that it's not just people most at risk of acquiring COVID-19, but people they say are most at risk of transmitting it. And that includes people who would disobey mask orders, lockdown orders, things like that. It wouldn't be that hard for them to make that jump. To expand on that,
just consider the possibility we're in a position where people are resistant. You mean like right now, right? Where people are saying, we don't want this thing. Then this is already in effect. And they're saying that, well, you know, people in prison or, you know, and then all of a sudden, all they have to do is effectively round up people who are violating the smallest of rules, masks, lockdowns, you know, put them in a holding cell and then they get the vaccine. Right. That's not unrealistic. And that's a position where you're under the care of this. So, you know, they're already violating all these. So they put you in a position where you're no longer making your choices, and they make sure that happens to people that are violating the larger agenda. Yeah. Seems pretty clear.
Yeah. And they chose Palantir to figure all this out for them.
The CIA.
What the hell? Well, it's not just the CIA, though. So, like, you look at the idea, how the people that created Palantir, like, think, like, their views on race, it's weird. These are weird guys, aside from the CIA thing. So, like, the CEO of Palantir is a guy named Alex Karp. He was recently quoted in this really lengthy New York Times profile that came out at the end of October, basically saying, I am surprised that I haven't been shot and pushed out of a skyscraper, like my skyscraper office, by a person that's a different ethnic group than me. And he's apparently been plagued by this is from the New York Times, plagued by this fear since childhood of being murdered because of being a racially amorphous, far left Jewish kid, is what he says. Or I'm paraphrasing more or less, but that's what he says. So he's like thinking constantly about this, allegedly. And then he goes on to say this fear of his propels a lot of decisions made by Palantir, which he runs. That's weird. He claims that his fear is based on the rise of the far right. But wait a second. He co-founded Palantir with Peter Thiel. Okay. Peter Thiel, a lot of his close associates, like Jeff Gisia, for example, very tied up with the so-called alt-right. People like Richard Spencer, Mike Cernovich, and whatever, funded and promoted those voices to an extent, very involved in the Trump administration. And also Peter Thiel's own views, you know, where he promotes ideas like from this Curtis Yarvin guy, if you've heard of him, that economic freedom and democracy are not compatible, that dictatorship is the best form of government, and all of this stuff. Allegedly, according to former classmates of his, Peter Thiel defended apartheid as a system, said apartheid was a sound economic system, and that the moral issues with apartheid were irrelevant and things like that. Okay, so why, if you're so afraid of the rise of the far right, why would you get in bed with the CIA and Peter Thiel? I think Alex Karp personally is full of shit. and so that he's, but regardless of what his real motivations for feeling that way is, this is something he's admitted in other articles before, this fear of race, a race war targeting him for whatever reason. He's obsessed with race. Okay. And this is the head guy at Palantir. Whatever his real motivations are, well, we can't really know, but his stated one doesn't make any sense because he and Peter Thiel, yeah, Peter Thiel is the far right. Okay. He claims to be a libertarian, Peter Thiel. Yeah. Right. I just have to say that, you know,
it's just incredible how these people can be in such key positions in so many ways, that even in ways like you're pointing out that seem to tie to the opposite of what they actually represent. And yet all people can do is focus in on someone like you that is just trying to discuss the current state of all of this. You know, it really is staggering to me. And you've mentioned this a few times, that one of your other articles you mentioned here is about that exact point, that this is,
yeah, this story is crazy.
Yeah. Well, go ahead if you want to jump into this, because these are seemingly two separate conversations, but obviously they're part and parcel. I mean, the idea of censorship around the topics, we all see how relevant that is.
Okay, so basically what this article is about is how GCHQ, which is like the UK's NSA at the beginning of November, more or less, said that they had initiated what they called cyber war against sites that promote anti-vaccine content, or what they deemed to be anti-vaccine content, and that they would not only, and that this would be coordinated not just with the UK, but all of the Five Eyes countries, which of course is the US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. Right. So in sites based in any of those countries that promote anti-vaccine content, GCHQ is going to take off the internet, basically. But they're not going to stop there with deplatforming your website. They're going to encrypt your data so you can't put your website up somewhere else. And they're going to scramble your communications so you can't communicate electronically to other people that would help you reset up your website. And all of these tools, they admit that they're going to be using now against anti-vaxxers, people they claim are anti-vaxxers, more like critics of Big Pharma and the national security state's huge involvement in this stuff. It's so nuts. These tools were developed originally to combat ISIS and ISIS online propaganda. Of course, ISIS is a construct of Western intelligence and Israeli intelligence. So it's pretty telling that those tools were developed under the guise of combating ISIS, you know, just like a lot of the tools developed to fight terrorism after 9/11, all of that, like DHS and all that stuff, right? Always the intention of that was to be turned against the domestic populaces of these different countries, specifically the US and the UK. And so we're seeing this in a huge way now. And so enemies of Big Pharma or vaccine manufacturers, people that are critical and bring up legitimate points they can't refute with argument or fact, you know, they're not just going to censor, they're going to treat as national security threats and enemies of the state. And so yeah. I point out in this article too that the UK power structure and also the US power structure have been making this effort really since July to label people they label as anti-vaccine as national security threats. And that is so alarming, because when does it, I mean, if they get away with this for vaccines, how long until any sort of critic of corporate power is treated right. as a national security threat? Okay, so it starts with Big Pharma, it starts with vaccines, okay, but you want to criticize Big Oil, you want to criticize, I don't know, any other of these massive industries, Big Agriculture, Monsanto or whatever. Right. You know, then you can be treated as an enemy of the state. I mean, this precedent is so nuts. And, you know, of course, it's not being covered like it should be. It's a total huge chilling effect on press freedoms in a huge way.
It's a common thread. And we've been talking about this for a long time where, I mean, just COVID-19. Some of your work has shown this more than any, is that, you know, these apparatus, the things they're using now to, whether it's the contact tracing bracelets or the technology to trace these people, they were previously used to track cattle or to track terrorists, right? And, you know, and now they're being used to protect us. And it's another example of exactly that. And it's really crazy. Yeah. The part that really blows my mind, though, is how crazy and how far they're going under the guise that it's about what? Stopping information that they disagree with. So not even censoring the content, but going after you, scrambling your information, right? And the point, as you're making, is that that is even a step in the direction of making us out to be actual criminals just for saying things they disagree with.
Well, now just in the past couple of days, we've had like the UN and some of these other organizations talk about an infodemic. How do we fight the infodemic? So now there's a pandemic of it's not a virus, there's an information pandemic of naughty information that must be eliminated, like a virus must be eliminated, right? So, I mean, they're mushing all of these talking points together, but it's pretty obvious what the overarching agenda is here, and it's really alarming. But I just went over the GCHQ part. There's also a US part to this, because basically this whole censorship of anti-vaccine content is phased with how far the vaccination campaign advances. So as the amount of vaccine doses increases, That's basically the censorship will similarly increase as vaccine production increases. This is what they say in their documentation. So the next phase they're going to enter into of censorship of this type of content will begin as soon as vaccines are approved. And what do you know? We have now heard that December 7th, the vaccine rollout begins in the UK. And on December 10th, it begins in the US, according to HHS. Okay, so that's next week. So if there's a censorship clamp down there, don't be surprised, because Warp Speed has told you it's coming, because as soon as a vaccine's approved, they talk about the need to saturate the entire media landscape, online, radio, and TV with pro-vaccine content and mitigate misinformation and anti-vaccine content, or content that promotes vaccine hesitancy.
Right there. Yeah, exactly. Because they're even halfway acknowledging some of these things are true, but they just don't want to say them. Because
they are true.
Right. So, it's just crazy. We're at a point where they're actually acknowledging that. Well, it is actually true, but people are misrepresenting it, so we have to remove it. It's crazy.
Why not argue with facts against stuff like I've reported on?
Exactly.
No, they just want to take it. They want to make it go away. They don't want to actually have to engage with the information. And that should really concern everyone, I think.
Yeah.
But what's crazy is that because this is a phased thing, the Army, the U.S. Army and Special Operations Command, it's the Air Force and Special Operations Command, two different parts of the military, contracted this company called Primer AI to develop basically an automated way of doing what GCHQ's cyber war would be. They're creating an AI to do that specifically for suspected disinformation on COVID-19. And not unlike GCHQ using these anti-ISIS propaganda tools, Primer AI was originally developed by people that used AI on that developed AI algorithms for the U.S. military to track insurgency in Iraq. And it's full of former counterterror officials that were involved in the occupation of Iraq, the Iraq surge, architects of that. Of course, the main architects of the Iraq war surge were the neocon Kagan family of PNAC. But another architect was Brett McGurk, who under Obama and most of the Trump administration was special envoy for Syria. He's part of this company. And the guy that runs Primer AI put out an article at the beginning of the year saying in 2020 is the year where we will begin to weaponize the truth, and talks about deplatforming sites and creating a new Wikipedia style resource for, you know, content on all things that's drawn directly from national security databases. So like the CIA, basically writing. The CIA World Factbook, but for everything being your only authoritative news source, right? And everything else gets deplatformed by this AI blob they're developing that's supposed to go live in February or March, right when the most amount of vaccine will be available, because they intend, from leaked documents in the UK, but also the US, plan to have the majority, if not the entire population, inoculated with this vaccine by April of next year.
We just need to see how this exact conversation was conspiracy theory. Like, that's crazy. It won't happen. Like, if we would have said this exactly is happening, regardless of why, what COVID being the explanation, you know, a year ago, people would say that's just never going to happen. That's crazy. This would not be happening without the excuse of COVID-19. Like so many other things that they're driving in, we must absolutely see that. And I want to point out that people need to remember that this concept, the vaccines that they're rolling out, as you've documented, it's experimental. It's new. They've never succeeded at this until now. So think about how unlikely it is that not only did they all end up succeeding, but they do exactly in the mark where they told us it would, right for our dark winter. Oh, guess what? December, right at the same time, two separate companies with things they haven't ever done before. And all of them are getting over 90%. I mean, who is actually buying that's the way this worked out?
Self-reported results.
Exactly.
This over 90% thing. Like a couple months ago, Bill Gates, who's put a lot of money into this mRNA vaccine technology, said, the efficacy is like 50%. And somehow it magically jumps in a couple of months with their self-reported results to like 90 and then 95.
Right. Think about how crazy
after
that
a couple
is.
Of days. All and at the same people. Time, they admit these self-reported results. The CEOs of these companies, Moderna and Pfizer, dump all their stocks.
Right. But think about how crazy it is that we have the entirety of Western media parroting what corporations are saying their efficacy is about a vaccine that they're claiming is going to save lives. That's crazy. That's not, you can't even pretend that that's journalism. They're parroting what they're being told to say, not even pretending.
No, it's bad. But I mean, this is part of their thing, saturating the media landscape. Right. So it's either you get deplatformed and censored and totally effed over, or you toe the line. And that's essentially the message they're trying to send here. And once they clamp down, probably on sites like yours and mine or whatever, in the coming weeks or whatever, as they roll out stuff, you know, they're going to try and send that as a heavy signal, I guess, to other would-be critics of this. But, you know, it's either stand up and denounce this now or, you know, don't do it. Like, especially like the whole like race angle of this and how messed up all of that is. If you claim to care about ethnic minorities and just actual justice, you know, and all of this stuff, and oppose eugenics and racism, how can you not call this out? Like, you have to see this for what it is and call it out. You can't wait until after the fact.
Yeah.
Okay. And be like, oh, well, the signs were there, but it sounded crazy then, and I didn't say anything. You know, I mean, if you're actually willing to look at the evidence objectively, it's there. It's there.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It couldn't be more clear. It's about choosing to align with what you believe is politically beneficial to your side. That's what all of this always comes down to. If we didn't have two-party politics bastardizing our perception of everything, this wouldn't be a question. This would be called out because it is obviously an issue. And it's the same thing with COVID-19. I mean, the reason that most Americans won't take this, it'd be 50%, give or take, based on what poll you look at, but yet then they act like the vast majority agrees with what's really happening. Those two things don't make sense. It's clear that the media is giving us the perception of where they want us to believe that we are. And it's things like this that I find to be the most alarming, that we actually have them now going around the people that are actually in control of the situation, a parent and their child, and finding ways. And this is actually something from 2019, mid 2019, that is suddenly now being pushed back into view. I believe I had it. Yeah. Right here. It's October 7th is when they started, after June 26, 2019. It's just disgusting. I mean, how can we even pretend that that is what we represent, is this country going to a child that is arguably not able to make their own choices in the mindset of this country? You can't drive, you can't vote, you can't join the military, but we can allow you to have a sex change as well as allow yourself to have a vaccine because your parent won't let, you know. What are your thoughts on this? And, you know, obviously it's just sickening. This kind of thing just drives me crazy.
You know, it's basically undermining parental rights to a huge degree. Children are really impressionable. They obviously don't have all the facts about stuff. They want to fit in, or they want things to be, you know, I mean, if they set it up where it's like, well, if you get the vaccine, you can go out and play during recess and stuff like that. But if you don't get the vaccine, you can't. I mean, just as an example, right? I don't know if that's going to be an official policy or not. But I mean, they've already admitted they're going to do that with adults. You know, so I mean, if they want to try and remove parental consent, you know, or give kids the ability to do whatever, I mean, kids are more easily intimidated, they're more easily manipulated, and to take parents out of the loop is a dangerous precedent. And I think, you know, a lot of these people at the end of the day, you know, kind of want it that way because it favors the power of the state, right? The more control the state has in parenting and within families. You know, that is a very slippery slope that could get pretty dicey. You know what I mean?
Right. What happens if this 12-year-old chooses to ignore his parents' concerns, gets the vaccine, has a serious side effect, and changes his life forever? Does he sue them now? Because it was his choice, right? Is he, he's not able to because they removed that, the liability issue. But the point is, there's just no way for a child to actually... This is so obviously off the rails, and it does not make sense with any other logic we apply to any other situation, save for the trans community, which I also argue doesn't make any sense. You're a child that does not understand things fully, being manipulated by adult level propaganda. This makes me sick. This shows us that people are choosing. This drives from a standpoint of that the vaccine is good no matter what. There's no question. There's no possibility of danger. It's good no matter what. And so the adult is the bad person for not allowing their kids.
Right. So but on. I think we need to look at this too beyond the vaccine. This is a push to make to give parents less control over young kids. I mean, this is different than like 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds or 18-year-olds. Okay.
Yeah.
When you're going like to 11, 10, 12, whatever, you know, that starts to get a little dicey. So what happens if, you know, Americans roll over for this type of stuff? Like how many other things can they eliminate parental consent for? That parental consent is there because the parents are supposed to anyway, right? And in most cases, it's true, right? Have the best interests of their kids at heart, at least more so than government bureaucrats that have no emotional connection to those children, right? Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, eliminating that and eroding that as a right, I mean, that presents problems that go far beyond vaccination issues, okay?
It
can be abused in the future. A lot of this, I think, is about setting precedents that they'll just continue to exploit as time goes forward, because they've already said, as far as the vaccine goes, it's more than one dose, it's multi-dose, and COVID is mutating. So every year, you're going to have to get a COVID vaccine. So that's like, based on what we have now, a minimum of 2 COVID-19 doses, vaccine doses per year for how long?
Yeah, exactly. And as we talked about, pharmacovigilance, but up to 24 months, monitoring inside your body, so on. You know, it's and we have to remember, just to insert this here where it seems like appropriate point, it's been explicit, as even multiple articles documented before they even finished the program. They weren't even trying to achieve immunity. They weren't even trying to achieve a cure. They were simply aiming for lessening the symptoms, meaning you can still share, you can still infect other people. People can still catch it if they don't have it. So what are we talking about? You know, it doesn't make any sense.
But it doesn't make sense at all.
Well, this just is left about to say just really quickly is that in regard to the kid point is that it strikes at the heart of the larger discussion we're always having about the government and what they're trying to achieve, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's domestic policy. It's about doing what they do is correct, regardless of morals, integrity, what's, you know, law. It's about might is right. We're correct. You have to do what you're told. It's about power. And it always seems to come back to that. In this child situation, they want to decide what's best for all of us, regardless of who, parent or child or so on. It shows you that they don't care about what it boils down to as the individual, your choice, your rights, you know, everything.
Totally. I would argue too, this is about money and power. A lot of this is also about like stock prices for these freaking big pharma firms.
Good point.
If you think about it, you know, because they've already sold before their trials were done. There's still no approval yet. They say the approval's coming, you know, in a week or whatever. But they already produced and sold hundreds of millions of doses. Pfizer's been producing hundreds of thousands of doses for months now before they were even approved. That's not how you normally do this sort of thing. Okay,
remember that they have them. He said that they already have them, not that they're paid for them, but they have them. It's not even been approved yet. That's incredible.
Right. So like in a normal world, imagine that the Pfizer safety trial shows that it's not safe or something.
Right.
Well, then Pfizer has produce all the stuff. Well, then someone takes a financial hit from that.
Or they don't, right? And they use it anyway, which has happened before, right?
But my point is, you know, that the trials were designed to succeed and favor the vaccine, right? So they're not, that financial hit, if you just look at precedent and in American history, it's really obvious that it's about protecting the interests of the powerful, the corporations and the people with power, protecting their bottom lines at the expense of everyone else. So to think that they want it like make sure those doses get given regardless of what the trials show, you know, I think is honestly naive if we look at how, you know, this works. Because I mean, the US bombs and blows up countries to protect corporation bottom lines, or overthrows governments abroad to protect the bottom line of corporations. The first CIA coup was to protect United Fruit Company's banana interests in Guatemala. Okay. And so, you know, I mean, that's how it's been basically this whole time. So to think they want to throw regular Americans, particularly vulnerable, poor or ethnic minorities under the bus, I definitely think is naive if you're actually willing to objectively look at American history and also objectively look at the facts of how Warp Speed was set up. In a way that no vaccination policy has ever been set up, using experimental vaccines they admit they don't know the safety profiles for, and they're going to have to examine people as they get them. And the first group they prioritize are the most vulnerable Americans, period, and the ones that have most consistently been targeted by the national security state for surveillance and oppression. And now they're acting like they're doing the same thing to help them and save them. Like we were talking about earlier, the Tuskegee stuff, you know, and the ones that have come after that, because there's a lot, and I point them out in my article, you know, pretty recent too, about bribing kids with Toys R Us gift cards to get an experimental drug they knew caused brain damage, and all this stuff to like poor Black kids in New York and Los Angeles and stuff like that. That wasn't that long ago. You know what I mean? Yeah. And what they do is they deceive, and they're like, oh, we're going to help you. You know, like Tuskegee, right. Oh, we're going to give you free health care to help treat you for a condition. They lied to them about their actual diagnosis because they wanted to see what happens when syphilis naturally takes its toll. Okay.
See,
they were never held accountable. You think they wouldn't do that shit again?
Right. And that's what it ultimately just morphed into, the perception changing, as we said, not the actions, but it all comes back to the idea of the danger, right? Is that their argument is like, and you could even make an argument, and I disagree with that too, but hypothetically you could argue, if COVID was as dangerous as they want us to think it is, well, you could argue that there may be some logic to, you know, rushing this through because who knows how many will die from COVID. See, that's what they're trying to do. But we're seeing in real time that that is not true. There is no question. To what degree, we could always argue, but it is not as dangerous as they're telling us it is. Their own data on the CDC shows you that now. So they're still trying to kind of float this idea that we need to rush the safety trials because you're in danger, which I think is the most counterintuitive thing I've ever heard in my life, but so is everything, you know, proactive self-defense or whatever, preemptive self-defense. But it just shows you that that's where they're trying to manipulate people. And you've got a lot of people out there that are panicked, smart people who are just afraid. And that's what ultimately, you know, what drives this. But I wanted to play this real quick. This is so important. And I played this a few times, but in regard to the swine flu, they admit, and it's admitted in this old mainstream interview, that they tested for something for swine flu, sold that to the American public, then just simply used a different one. And it caused a lot of problems. And this is, again, why would we think that this wouldn't happen again? Let me play this real quick.
The swine flu scare of 1976. That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic. Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, 2/3 of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold.
Dr. David Sensor, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed. There had been cases in Australia that were reported by the press, by the news media. There were cases in...
None confirmed. Did you ever uncover any other outbreaks of swine flu anywhere in the world?
No.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine, and that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage. if you get into a mass immunization program?
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hatwick?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hatwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hatwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that.
I've said that Dr. Hatwick had never told me of his feelings on this subject.
And he's lying.
I guess you would have to make that assumption.
Then why does this report from your own agency, dated July 1976, list neurological complications as a possibility?
I think the consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
You didn't feel it was necessary to tell the American people that information?
I think that over the years, we have tried to inform the American people as fully as possible.
Gosh, I mean, that is just one wormy individual. Yes, this is from the 70s, but remember, this happened again, and I believe it was 2009, if I'm remembering correctly. H1N1, right? It's not new, and it continues to happen. But that's one of the best examples of not only a little bait and switch with even the vaccine that they use, but the lying about the testing, lying about, you know, what the side effects. This is not new for our country, you know, and this is what I find to be so incredible that it's not to say that we know as a matter of fact it's happening now, but if it happened ever, more than once, in fact, it should be allowed to be discussed. And we are simply not allowed to even have this conversation today. And I think that says more than anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with you. I mean, why would they not want to, if vaccine hesitancy is such a concern for them, why not address these core issues like the past examples of the U.S. government using illegal medical experimentation, the fallout from past pandemics, corruption that arose there, like the bird flu pandemic or whatever during the George W. Bush administration. Donald Rumsfeld made like millions of dollars because he Gilead, which he used to run, while he was in office as the head of Department of Defense, he held tons of Gilead stock. Gilead's Tamiflu was promoted by the U.S. government, the same administration Rumsfeld was in, as necessary to stockpile for basically a pandemic they lied about and overinflated the severity of.
Didn't he have his money from, was it Cipro in regard to the anthrax? I know he made like $5 million with the anthrax scare for Gilead as well.
Probably, but I'm not sure exactly what that was. But I do know that with the bird flu one, he made a ton of money, and that was essentially manufactured by other people in the same presidential administration that Rumsfeld was a part of. And there was never any accountability for that, right? So, I mean, you look at the precedents, there's lots of reasons to be concerned, but they don't want to. No one's ever held accountable, and they don't want people bringing this stuff up and being like, why can't people be held accountable for their crimes under the guise, especially when those crimes are committed under the guise of promoting public health? Okay, and so we're bad for not trusting them, but if we bring up this stuff, they want to censor us. They don't want to like actually respond with facts and argument. You know, I mean, people that are scared of the truth have something to hide. Period.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing they're doing with everything else, like we've talked about. What they're trying to do is act like and act like it's so obvious that we can't even we don't even respond, right? That it's all conspiracy theory. That the only reason people are hesitant is because of fake news and misinformation. But that's obviously not true, because in their own documents, they point to the examples of why they're actually concerned, like the experimentation or any number of times that they've gotten it wrong or been mistaken, you know, so we'll give them that. Who knows? But it's obvious there's reasons to be concerned. And what's crazy is that they're censoring all of it. Not just, you know, genuine debate. And on, by the way, on that note, I'll find out and maybe include it. I don't remember if it was Zipro, but I do remember for sure that he made $5 million from the anthrax discussion after researching
Well, so after the anthrax attacks, there was like stockpiling of different pharmaceuticals, the origins of the Strategic National Stockpile as it is now and things like that. So it's very likely that one of the things that was stockpiled was something that Gilead produced, remdesivir, Tamiflu, one of those things. But I'd have to look into that for more information. But it's interesting that one of the first people put in charge of that part at HHS right after the anthrax attacks was the mentor of Tara O'Toole and Thomas Inglesby of the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. And Thomas Inglesby is the guy that co-wrote a lot of this woke vaccine allocation guidance that we were just talking about earlier in the show. It was Inglesby, you know, the Dark Winter crowd, basically. Right. That was behind this, the anthrax attacks. Yikes, dude. These are not good people. We should, like I was saying earlier, the people in charge of this stuff are the people that should be farthest away from this type of activity.
About as far away as a jail cell is where they should be.
Or launched into the sun. That's my preferred punishment. Yeah.
I mean, conflicts of interest alone are borderline criminal, right? I mean, the ability to benefit off of the implementation of things, even mandatory like anthrax, is just is criminal in my opinion. But then you go even further and you talk about things like with Robert Kadlec in regard to anthrax. I mean, it's so clear that they intentionally did things they knew would hurt people, and then they did hurt people.
Hey, well, these days, conflicts of interest is the status quo. If you don't have conflicts of interest, you don't get in government anymore, the way things are set up. You know what I mean?
Maybe here's another way to say that. If you're not a bit able to be compromised, you won't get into government. That's also how I see that, the outside influence. You know,
that's a way to look at it, too. Yeah. But something I want to bring back to you about this focus on ethnic minorities, I really feel like they, the national security state, is most concerned about unrest from these groups they're targeting as priority populations first because of the extreme economic situation in the country, long existing economic equality, and the fact that like a lot of big protests in the past, you know, have been, you know, led in a lot of cases by ethnic minorities or ethnic minorities that participated to a huge degree. And I think, you know, it suggests that they're like most concerned about them because, you know, I mean, Palantir, for example, on behalf of the national security state, sends these same groups they're prioritizing for the vaccine to prison. They either send them to ICE camps or they send them to prison through their predictive policing programs or other things. Peter Thiel has backed, like Clearview AI, where police use racially biased facial recognition algorithms to convict people of crimes. Right. You know, these are all race targeted things now being done under the guise of public health. But like we have talked about before in relation to the election, you know, the powers that be, and this is part of why the Great Reset and all of this stuff is going on now, they want to maintain this inequality. And it's gotten so extreme that they know at some point the lower classes and the middle class, well, you can argue is basically non-existent at this point, will at some point unite and go against the billionaires and be like, give us a piece of the pie, or you guys are screwing us over, or whatever. They want to avoid that from happening. So right now they're playing for keeps.
I think
Warp Speed is a part of that.
I think that's
the Great Reset's more of it, but I mean, these are the groups that they're most afraid are going to rise up first. The people.
I think that's where lockstep comes in, right? I mean, you just described exactly that whole point. The idea, the lockstep, you know, where they openly discuss that, well, these people are rising up and well, they have a reason to, but we'll just manipulate them to put them back in their place. But that's
think tank. Tell them it's for their health. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But lockstep is arguably not even about health. It's like,
it's not.
Right?
It's about power and control.
Using those excuses.
Using the excuse of public health. Yeah. Right. By telling people it's about the collective good and all of this stuff. And that's why you hear the Great Reset, for example, sell itself with it'll be a more sustainable and inclusive world and all of this stuff. When if you actually look at what they want to do, no. It, you know, inclusive Are you kidding me? It creates a giant feudal class and then the techno elite at the top. Inclusive, I guess if you're a billionaire, it's inclusive and it's more sustainable for the status quo, not the planet.
Well, right. But I take issue with, I have a big thing with word, like, I take issue with using the word inclusive and planet. That doesn't make sense. We're talking about societal constructs, maybe.
This is all emotional appeal stuff, though.
Exactly.
I want people to feel good about it. Like, yeah, that's the world I want. World Economic Forum, I'm on board, you know?
I'm pretty sure we're all included on the planet. I don't think there's a way to be not included on the planet. So it's, you know, it's about, you know, the point is, that they're trying to make it out to be something where it's like the, you know, it's just so ridiculous to really try to paint it in a way that's anything other than them actually segregating people into different areas and naming that inclusivity or how, you know, whatever they want to call it, because inherently people are dividing now more than they ever have. And it's because of that policy, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. Also that whole World Economic Forum thing they've been putting out lately of you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Someone's going to own that, and it's going to be Klaus frickin' Schwab and all his pals.
Yeah.
And so everyone else will be equal because they'll all own nothing, but the billionaires will own all the stuff and they'll rent it to you as long as you're like a good slave.
Philanthropist billionaires, right? That's it. It was very telling to look when Klaus Schwab joined Twitter to see who his like first 15 people he's followed. If you take a look, it was exactly who you would think, right? It's like people, Bill Gates and all the, you know, which isn't a surprise, but it just shows you that this is not some secret. These people are in this circle and are all driving towards this agenda. That's not some conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy.
Hey, but they're saying it is now. The Great Reset, they're saying, is the new Biden conspiracy theory. Like, oh my gosh, did you not see Time Magazine like run this stuff? Or like
Time Magazine ran that article on the same day that Klaus Schwab was announcing and is celebrating the Great Reset. He literally was saying, yay, Great Reset. And they're like, Great Reset's a conspiracy theory. It's just...
They call it a baseless conspiracy theory. Yeah. I mean, they're running out of ammo. These people are so desperate. And the people that are still in MSM doing this crap, being stenographers like this, they can't be that talented, you know? I mean, they can only, like, come up with so much crap to feed people. I mean, when you're seeing the Great Reset stuff everywhere and Build Back Better everywhere and someone's telling you it's a baseless conspiracy theory, I don't know. I mean, only brain-dead people are going to be buying that at this point.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, and that's the idea. Not more so, not brainless, yes, but brain dead, yes, but more
or
so.
Or emotional driven.
Just people that, I would say people that want to politically drive what they want to achieve. It's, you know, the two-party illusion, you know, there's so many factors there that people are just willing to go along with anything as long as they feel like it's like, oh, I win. I was on the right side. I'm like, my guy got it. You know, it's like, social engineering. It's incredible.
Oh, but man. Yeah.
Since we're touching on politics to kind of wrap up here towards the end, I thought maybe we could just quickly discuss where we think this is going, because I think you and I have done our best to, I mean, obviously I think it's clear that we're, you know, two-party illusion type ideas here, that we're talking about, you know, the left and the right being just illusions in the one party idea, and that Trump and Biden, whether they know it or not, are just progressing the same one thing. That's how I see it, in a very reductive way. And I think we've been openly talking about this and making it clear that we're not saying we support Biden or that Trump lost, you know, calling out the election fraud and so on. There's such a mire of just political nonsense in this whole thing.
Yeah, I know. It's been funny though.
Like, yeah, it has.
Giuliani's face melting. That was pretty sweet. I like that.
But you know, it's another point though where, I mean, look, is it possible that Trump could lay out some massive bombshell in the last few weeks? Sure. I mean, anything's possible, but it looks pretty clearly like he's losing these. They're already starting to certify in all the states. They're, you know, what I think it was Michigan. I just saw they're already starting to certify for Biden. So, you know, where do you see this going? You know,
I think the date to watch is the Electoral College date, December 14th. I think there's going to be a lull. They're going to make people think the election chaos is over. And then there's going to be some crazy stuff going down with the Electoral College, the dueling elector stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to make a comeback. And that's just my opinion, though.
Which,
but you have to keep in mind, too.
In the beginning, would have heard that, like, after November 3rd, they were like, you're wrong. And it's like, clearly it was discussing all the way until the 20th and the electors.
The dark 11 weeks between Election Day and Inauguration Day. The reason we did that election special, in case people didn't like get that, was because we were worried about the censorship. And so there's like all this stuff that's been building for the end of the year and the dark winter and all of this stuff, right? So the idea is to get it to the widest audience possible and preempt this stuff, right? You know? So, I mean, that's where all of that came from, right?
And it was clear.
The Transition Integrity Project, it's worth pointing out, all of their simulations basically ended, and they all ended with Biden being installed at some point. That's who they want in. I mean, even the people that supposedly were responsible for like backing Trump and keeping him in power this whole time against like the never Trumpers and all that stuff on the left and the right, you know, were the Zionists among others, right? But they quickly went over to Biden. Netanyahu was like gushing over Biden right away. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty clear who they want in.
I just argue that he's saying,
but I think there's going to be more chaos because, you know, like we pointed out in that election special, there's been the setup by Trump's DHS, okay, to create a domestic war on terror. That's why for the past year and a half, the FBI and the National Security State has been saying QAnon's a domestic terror threat. Conspiracy theorists are a domestic terror threat. Now it's anti-vaxxers, you know, all of this stuff. They're and like we talked about before on the show, they're lumping QAnon and anti-vaxxers and all of these different groups together, you know.
As well as anti-Semitism. They're making some weird stretch. Right. You're like, oh, it's all the anti-vaxxers are anti-Jewish. And like, there's no logic to it. It's, they're just mixing it all together.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. And that's because of this domestic war on terror they're setting up for. But they have to have some sort of event to demonize Trump supporters. And they need that election. That's going to happen, in my opinion, before Inauguration Day, because they need Trump to still be around. Also, though, they can use the narrative of Trump wanting to create chaos before he leaves office or whatever, because he's a sore loser or whatever, to justify getting embroiled with Iran. Some sort of confrontation there, which Israel admitted they were gunning for anyway, back in what, like June or July?
Right. Well, that's what becomes very interesting, right? Is that now we're seeing the assassination. And I would honestly, my opinion is it's a U.S. Israeli assassination. That's how I, you know, the facts are still coming out.
Soleimani was.
Right.
So
as we see that happening, we see an assassination on an Iranian scientist. You know, right now it's kind of primed up for, you know, what if a false flag carries out? This is all hypothetical. But, you know, if something happens right now, they could, you know how easy it would be to say, oh, it was Iran retaliating. And that could be made up.
Totally. And they have been setting up for this all year. And we've been talking about it for the past couple months. And what's really telling is that DHS's CISA, their cybersecurity arm, we've talked about how compromised they are with Silicon Valley and Israeli intelligence and all of this stuff. They had their election operations center to protect against foreign cyber attacks and all of this stuff during Election Day. The head guy said Election Day, this was after our election special, obviously. He said Election Day's halftime. We're going to keep this open till mid-December, right. December 15th, which is the day after the Electoral College stuff, right?
Now, Krebs was let go by Trump. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think it was just part of this narrative of, he's firing his enemies, and that gives them sort of like legitimacy and maybe a potential role with the Biden administration or something. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. Trump, right? Yeah,
because
CISA didn't exist till 2018. Yeah, so yeah. Trump administration stuff. Yeah, it was created under the Trump administration,
right?
And CISA was created to force states, state election systems, to work with DHS for cybersecurity stuff to get around those complaints by states like Georgia in 2016 that they were saying we weren't hacked by Russia, we were hacked by DHS,
of course,
and things like that. So
which
CISA was answer to that. Oh, I know. But they were saying DHS came back and said, oh, it's because you rejected our help. You know, so they obligate states to help by creating CISA. And they put the Microsoft executive Chris Krebs in charge. Like, Trump doesn't like Microsoft. I mean, he gave them the Microsoft. He gave them the Pentagon cloud. And Microsoft's whole cloud, Azure cloud business, is run by an Israeli Unit 8200 guy named Asaf Rapoport. So, like. Okay,
it's silly. Yeah, it's silly. But the other part of this is this Dominion Smartmatic sort of question. So before we leave here today, because this is why I find this to be so relevant to our discussion, right? Is that you brought this up? I don't know, months before this was even something that was being, you know, the new hot topic of like the, you know, I guess reduced version of the story so it fit a MAGA discussion, right? That you talked about Smartmatic, you talked about Dominion on a show that we did. It might have been the election special. I think it was.
No.
No?
Was it? I don't know.
I don't remember.
Sorry.
It was in passing, and we mentioned it, and we talked about Dominion having ties to the Clinton Global Initiative and so on, right? And it's just interesting. So now that it's all of a sudden become this big discussion point, where it's like Dominion and, you know, and Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, and then it's just
the ghost of Hugo Chavez. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really silly in a lot of ways, but there is, I think, here's what's interesting. It's silly in the ways it's trying to be bent to be only about Trump and an effort to get him to lose versus it being around in every single election. And it's always that problem that they allow to carry over. So,
right. Well, it's a legitimate problem, but the way they brought it up and then tied it to Hugo Chavez and stuff delegitimizes it. So people can easily dismiss the whole thing and be like, well, it obviously worked because they're saying it's Hugo Chavez's fault. That's crazy, you know, but there is an actual issue with the electronic voting machines. Dominion and all of that stuff got money from the Clinton Foundation to be the voting machines in post-conflict democracies, i.e., you know, they invade, they overthrow the government, and then they set up a U.S. democracy TM, right? And then this is the voting machines they roll out that the U.S., the Clintons back, and all of these different U.S. power brokers and politicians are backing, or George Soros or whatever, all of these people.
And this was Delian or Delian project, right?
Delian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's what's interesting too, is that the more you dig into this, and I did a whole show on this, is that, you know, ESNS Diebold were essentially started by the two brothers, right? One brother, they were all in ESNS. He broke off and he started it. And then they got all the attacks, and your guys are set, you know, the flipping votes and so on. And then ENS buys them back. So there's this illusion of different companies. And even now we have Dominion, who's bought in Diebold machines. We have ESNS ties with Dominion. It's all clear. And this has been ongoing for as long as I can look back. I mean, here's actually a document that I just saw somebody discussing. This is July 6, 2010. Now, this is specifically about this same issue. And you can see it goes on to talk about, here were the parts right here, you know, voting systems, business, Diebold, charges of fraud, right? This is 2010. It says the Federal Security Exchange Commission announced a settlement with Diebold and its former chief executive, which, remember, the brother, or actually, no, that's the owner, but the owner of this company was a brother with someone who owns ES&S. So just kind of in the family, right? And it says, so they actually settled on charges of fraud. They went on to use these machines long after that. Mm-hmm. So just like, it's incredible to me that we can be in a position where we see them and actually they admit to committing fraud, pay off, you know, deal with the settlement, and then we continue using machines. And act today like voter machine fraud is fake news.
Well, you know what's really telling? I read about a company called Periscript that's a Silicon Valley company. They're super shady, and they were intimately involved in verifying the signatures with software that had never been used for elections ever before. They rolled it out in May, and it was used for mail-in ballots this election. They're teamed up with Microsoft. They're teamed up with Lockheed Martin, a pretty shady company. You can read my report on them. Why was there no interest in this company? It's just Dominion and Smartmatic. Why aren't they looking? I mean, if the issue was mail-in ballots, more so, they say, right, than electronic voting machines, why ignore that whole cluster funk, right?
Yeah.
Kind of weird that they would like limited hangout it to such a big degree. But I think at the end of the day, what the goal of this is, and these intelligence agencies, you know, outlined this a year ago, the goal of the 2020 election was to have a majority of the U.S. population no longer believe in the integrity of the election system, so that you know, they can replace the form of government essentially with something else, because the faith, majority of Americans' faith in the democratic system is significantly eroded. Well, that's very true for Trump's base, and that's millions of people.
I think that's true in a general sense. And this is the idea. Again, it's not because you have reason to be concerned. It's because fake news and liars.
Yeah.
And like, that's not the truth. There's go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to say what they want to replace it with is Silicon Valley takeovers.
Right.
So that's, I think, why this company Periscript, deep ties to Microsoft, Lockheed Martin, and all of this stuff, were totally ignored. And then you also have, you know, this promotion of Election Guard. Microsoft, after the 2020 election, said in several press reports, in the 2024 election, Election Guard will be used nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, they're telling you, this is a Silicon Valley takeover. Silicon Valley billionaires all backed Biden to a huge degree over Trump. Why aren't Trump's legal team, Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani, going after the Silicon Valley billionaires?
Right.
And their huge control over all of this stuff. Or the fact, for example, that the DNC had all of these tech tools and data warehouses that on the day of the election were being run by Google. that there's a bunch of ex-Google executives that have top positions at the DNC, and the Election Operations Center being run by DHS's CISA and Chris Krebs included Google. Google's part of that operations center.
Yeah.
Don't you see how that could be a huge conflict of interest? They're not bringing this stuff up, and it's for a reason, right? Yeah. Because Google and all these Silicon Valley companies under the Trump administration in 2018, National Security Commission on AI, fused formally with the military and the intelligence community, and that's who's running the government. And all of this other crap is scripted theater to keep us divided and not realize that it's these guys that are building this panopticon to enslave us all, whether you're on the left or the right, the Great Reset. It, you know, it's all these people doing that together. I mean, so I don't know. To think that getting the election overthrown or whatever and getting Trump installed is going to make all of this stuff go away and the Great Reset's going to disappear and there's not going to be forced vaccinations and all of this stuff. You're deluding yourself, period.
I agree. And as I've said before, and this applies to many other circumstances that he could have, such as the mask discussion or the lockdown discussion. But in this case, all Trump would have had to do was actually take on the full breadth of the problem, stand up and say, Yes, there was cheating, but guess what? There's been cheating every single year. Here's the proof. Here's the U.S. Here's an article from the New York Times. Here's the NPR from two elections ago, all saying it's happening. And here's the proof, just like we did shows on it. Can you imagine how much that would change? He would get my support in that moment for actually calling out the real problem.
Yeah.
They bend it to be only about Trump and only about this case. They ignore or remove information that makes it about maybe happening to a Democrat before or ties to people they don't want you to see. And that's why it will never change. That tells me they didn't want it to change. Trump too.
100%.
And that's what's so difficult. Yeah. Well, I wanted to show a couple more points on this real quick before we wrap this up that I want. I think it's interesting.
Okay, I got about 5 minutes, so.
Okay, perfect. I figured as much. So I just wanted to make this interesting point here that we're talking about Smartmatic and they're making it about Hugo Chavez and Venezuela, which, by the way, obviously plays into the larger narrative that's a bit that's above and beyond Trump, right? That he's been pushing to. But it's interesting.
Regime change in Venezuela this whole time, and now he's like, and it was Venezuela.
Yeah, right?
It's just silly.
It's really silly. But just to point out here, and I won't read through it all, but just that in this document on Wikipedia, even it's talking about how, yes, in the beginning, there were three engineers that began collaborating while working in a group in Venezuela. But it goes on to be used and basically the U.S. government, as we pointed out with the Clinton Foundation in different ways. But understand that these are entities that were being used to try to influence the Venezuelan aspect, not, in my opinion, by someone like Chavez trying to fight against that. And that's why we see the Clinton groups using it to try to influence foreign governments and their democratic elections. But what I find interesting is this guy in particular. This Lord Moloch Brown guy was actually the board chair of the board. And this says he's the CEO on here, which was also changed. And I'll show you what I mean. He's not even listed anymore. This page was completely down. They removed it. Then they put it back up with someone else. And you can see it lists here as well the other aspect. And here's why I know for a fact, because I still have it on my YouTube video where I showed where it says clearly that he's the chairman. And it talks about how he is the vice chairman of George Soros' investment fund and his Open Society Institute.
Now
it's just gone. And just, you know, and it's not, and they didn't remove them. They didn't announce they were getting a new director. They just quietly shifted things around. I just find that to be staggeringly obvious that there's something going on here, you know? And this is one aspect, Smartmatic being software that's used on the larger aspect, but this is a control mechanism.
Well,
the eyeball machines, the software, it's there and we can see it, I think. Please go wrap this up here.
This has been an issue for a long time. Okay. Like, remember back in 2004 in Ohio and that election, all of that stuff. I mean, that was the time to raise the alarm if anyone with political power or a big voice nationally wanted to raise the alarm about integrity, threats to integrity of the election system. Okay. And they haven't been doing it for a long time. What they're doing now with this whole thing is clearly a limited hangout. It has an ulterior motive. It's not about stopping the problems with the election system in the U.S. It's, you know, we already talked about what the real agenda is here. And it's really concerning to see how many people have been caught up in this. Trusting people like Rudy Giuliani. Are you kidding me? One of the most corrupt dudes ever. Remember what that guy did on 9/11? I mean, really? You're going to put all your faith in him? All you like red pill Trump supporters, you're going to be like Giuliani's the guy that's going to save you?
I think they were told to trust him. right? And that's what it boils down to. And, you know, someone like, yeah. I also remember to include James Corbett's work on Giuliani in regard to 9/11 so we can understand what that really means. But yeah, it's pretty bad.
Q told people to trust John Bolton. And right. then John Bolton comes out, now he's like Trump's obvious enemy, and now Q people hate him. But right. they were told to trust him first. I mean, I don't know. I don't really expect a lot of Q people to admit they've been had, but, you know, it's going to get, yeah.
What I've been trying to say in this whole thing, you know, it's what we have to remember at the end of the day, we were all there at one point, and maybe we're there right now. We're not trying to pretend that we have all the answers. The point is that it's clear that this group was manipulated. And what we need to realize too, is that I actually think the reason they were so focused on is because I think their hearts to a large degree are in the right place. They want to believe in the country. They want to believe in the American people. They want to believe in the Constitution. So realize that you were fooled like we all have been, and let's fight this together. Let's actually reach out and change this thing in a way that actually will last and has substance, right? So, you know, thank you for being here, Whitney. As always, I love having these conversations with you. It's important to really be critical about this information, and that's what it comes down to, not trusting anything, including us. So anything else you want to leave us with before we get out of here?
No, I think we've laid out a lot of really important stuff. Hopefully people feel compelled to share this around before the censorship hammer on channels like TLAV or My Site or things like that, you know, before that drops, apparently next week, if we want to believe Warp Speed, right? Yep. This is a good week to share this info out, you know what I mean? So if you feel compelled to do so, we would greatly appreciate it, you know, and really now is the time to stand up and say something, because what's going on now is bad. It's going to get worse until people start, you know, disobeying, saying something. And it's really important more people in independent media realize this isn't about your business model anymore. This isn't about your YouTube monetization anymore. The risks are pretty high, you know. I mean, it's like sort of like a speak now or forever hold your peace type of moment that we're entering into. So, you know, we really need all hands on deck. So I really hope to see more people in independent media realize the urgency of the situation that we're facing as a country and really as a world at this point.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, it's just really, as it all boils down, it's time to have the courage to stand up. There's been times where it felt like something was changing, where it felt like things were happening, but clearly we're at a moment where that time is now. So find that courage, have the Constitution to stand up for what you actually believe in, and ignore the two-party politics that are using your emotions to circumvent your logic. Thank you for being here. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about the trouble in trying to get responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.